from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll talk with the actor who plays the wizard in the touring production of Wicked, which just came to town.
Yeah. I'll chat with Dr. Mary Froese about artists and their dreams.
Then we'll have a special end-of-the-year roundtable discussion with Sharon, Matt Sosi, and myself about what we loved in the arts this past year in Indy. And we'll have our arts calendar, of course, that we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Actor Don Amendola has been in everything from Wayne's World to Seinfeld, from Frasier to Ed Wood, but his latest role has him working with some of the most frightening co-stars ever, the Flying Monkeys of Oz. Amendola gets to play the wizard in the touring production of the Broadway musical Wicked, which came to town this week and runs through January 1st at the Murat Theater at Old National Center. Travis DiNicola spoke with Amendola by phone.
Wicked has been in town. About a year and a half ago was the first time that it came to Indy, the touring company. And a different wizard then, who was absolutely fantastic, but as I'm sure you are going to be as well. I know people are so excited to have Wicked back in town. I mean, it sold out every night. It was in town before and such. Tell me about being a part of the tour for this. You've been playing the wizard for how long now?
This December 9th will be a year for me. What's it like?
Yeah, what's it like being the wizard? I mean, that's such an exciting role.
It's good to be the wizard. You don't show up for a while, but all they do is talk about you. So by the time you hit the stage, you're pretty well known to the audience. Of course, they know you before, or they know of you before they even walk into the theater. Everyone has grown up with the story from one perspective. We just show you another one.
Do you remember watching Wizard of Oz yourself when you were a kid?
Oh, boy, do I ever.
Yeah.
I was a tot, and I remember who we went to the theater with. I remember what I was wearing, where we sat in the theater, what the song of the cartoon was, the words of that song. I remember everything about that experience. I remember being afraid of the Green Lady and, of course, the monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty seminal in my life.
Yeah.
But I expect that's true for everyone. It's that kind of a story for us.
It really is. I mean, everyone, has such great memories of it. And, I mean, so few people I can imagine have never, seen Wizard of Oz. So, of course, when they come to see Wicked, they have so many preconceptions of what it could be like or what it's going to be like. I know that the first time that I got to see Wicked, what I was just blown away by was how interesting and intricate the story is that makes up this musical.
Oh, so clever. Gregory Maguire, when he wrote this book, was so very clever. And, of course, this is another generation away. Winnie Holtzman wrote the book for this. And it is so witty and clever. I listen to this show every single night throughout. I can't turn the speakers off and read. I can't. I'm fascinated by it. And every night I appreciate it. I think it's a wonderful piece.
Yeah, it is. It's great writing. And do you have any? I mean, advice that you would give to an audience goer who maybe has not seen Wicked yet, is going for the first time, and maybe doesn't know a whole lot about the story as far as what expectations to bring or what expectations to leave behind?
I don't think so. I think the themes are so universal and so important always, but especially for our times now. It speaks to everyone. It on one level or another. I think that's why we have audiences come back time and time again to see it, because you always get something new out of it. So I just say, come and enjoy it, and you'll be entertained as well. But I don't think you have to know anything about even the story to appreciate it. You know, everyone understands what a fairy tale is, and in its way, it's a fairy tale. So just come and enjoy.
It certainly is. For you, I mean, was there a challenge, though, in approaching the role of the wizard that, you know, that so many people already have a preconceived notion of who the wizard is and what he does and, you know, the man behind the curtain and all that?
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing I've always tried to do in my career is not cast myself, you know, so I don't question when I'm cast in something either. Hmm. I just assume they know better. But I think, I mean, you always want to do your best, but I never thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? I kind of left that at the door when I walked in.
Mm-hmm.
And just, hope I'm doing a good job, you know. I see him sort of as the guy from the movie, even though I'm not trying to play him, you know. He's just a guy who did his best when he landed in an unknown land, and they thought he was something he wasn't, and he liked it, and, you know, so he does his very best to hang on to it. You know, as someone said, it's not that he's a bad man, he's just not a very good wizard.
Yeah, so true. You know, I mean, what's really, you know, kind of fascinating are these extra layers of complexity that the wizard has, all the characters really have, you know, in Wicked, and more of the backstory as it's told. And I'm certainly not going to ask you to give any of that away, but I will ask this. What is it like working with the flying monkeys?
I tell you, sometimes it's, you know, again, I can't help but think back to when I first saw them when I was a little kid, and it's scary.
Yeah.
You know, and they look, I will tell you this, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I have no idea which is which when those monkeys come on stage. I travel with this company. And I don't know who's who. I don't know who that monkey is or who that monkey is or who that monkey. I have no idea. They look so different. And so I don't know who they are. I don't know which one's which.
Well, I mean, there's some really fantastic costumes and obviously incredible makeup that's done for the witch. Your character doesn't really have too much of that to deal with, right?
No.
So you kind of got it easy, I mean, compared to the rest of the cast, you know.
Yes, I do. I do. It's true. I've just started on my second brown pencil. It's the only thing I use. I make three little marks on my face, and that's it. I'm done. You know, they're just secondary shadows that I was taught when I was a student. But, no, I don't have to do any of that.
That's nice.
It is. It makes a big difference.
Now, you said something really interesting earlier about how you don't cast yourself and you just sort of trust how you're cast. I'm curious about, I mean, some of your other roles. I was, you know, looking at your bio. I know you've been in some, you know, really wide variety of movies, everything from, you know, Ed World and Wayne's World as well as, you know, a lot of different TV appearances, Seinfeld, Frasier, L.A. Law, you know, Twin Peaks, things like that, a lot of other theater work. I mean, is there a... You know, I mean, without casting yourself, is there a type of work that you like to do or that you often find yourself doing?
You know, no. I've been very lucky in my life as an actor. I've never been pigeonholed into one character or another. So I've done lots of dramas, lots of comedy. I play the bad guy, I play the good guy. I've been very, very lucky that way. And no complaints about that.
Let me, that's certainly great to hear. I mean, that you have that opportunity and that flexibility in your work. And And you know, and certainly the wizard is, you know, a good guy and a bad guy and everything in between.
Yes.
You know, in many ways. Let me ask you just a last question, sort of a different type of question. You're going to be here playing the wizard in Wicked in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, during the holidays, really. I mean,
yes.
In December and stuff. And it's, you know, a bit of a long run. And how do you, what does the cast do during the day? Do you guys, you know, go out and check out the city? Are you, you know, you're not constantly working on lines and things? Because, you know, by this point, that's all done. So.
Yes. That is, although there is rehearsal every single week for the members of the company, at least, you know, I mean, just brush ups and the show is kept very, very clean. And, so there is rehearsal every week, at least a couple days a week. Not that everyone is involved every week, but of some sort, some people rehearse every week. But we always explore the city. The first week is difficult because we come in, we travel on what is ostensibly a day off, so they, the next day is our day off, and then we have to do 8 shows in 5 days.
Yeah.
So there's very
little
time
exhausting.
In the first week. Yeah, there's just, you have to kind of conserve your energy for the show, but this is a very intrepid company when it comes to different cities, you know. Everyone takes their trips and goes here and goes there and sees what there is to see.
Well, we are greatly looking forward to having Wicked back in Indianapolis, and hope that you enjoy the tour and your stay here.
Oh,
you know, things like that are
looking
so.
Forward to coming back. They had a wonderful time last time.
Oh, good.
You know, to be able to.
That's great
to
hear.
To have to stay there at Christmas time is, you know, away from family can be sad, but everyone's looking forward to Indianapolis. So.
Good. So a lot of the people that are in this company were part of the tour before, is that correct?
They were. Uh-huh.
Great. Okay.
That's true.
Very good. Well, Don, thank you so much for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
A pleasure.
Travis DiNicola with actor Don Amendola, who plays the wizard in the musical Wicked. Wicked is playing through January 1st at the Murat Theater at the Old National Center. For ticket information, visit the Murat box office or BroadwayAcrossAmerica.com. Again, BroadwayAcrossAmerica.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Dr. Mary Froese thinks you should pay attention to your dreams. She based her doctoral dissertation on years of research with artists and others who explored their dreams and benefited from what they learned. Sharon Gamble invited Mary to tell us more.
Everybody knows somebody who says, I never have dreams.
Right, and the theory is that we all dream. It's just some of us remember them and some of us don't.
You know, you had a dream once. You were working with a blended congregation, I guess we could call it, of Lutherans and Methodists, do I have this right, in a small town in Nebraska?
A very small town in western Nebraska. I mean, in waking time, my house was just across the street from the Lutheran church.
Mm-hmm.
So in the dream, I was in that house, and I looked out the window and across the street, and I saw that the Lutheran church was on fire, or the building was on fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And once the fire was out, I went over with a couple parishioners to look at this, you know, what was left, and you know, everything was pretty much burned down to the ground except for the pulpit, a chair. That was it, the pulpit and the chair.
So did you take it to mean that only our faith matters, only the word of God, receiving the word of God matters, the rest is just trappings, the rest is just expendable?
Yeah, that's kind of what I came down to, whether or not that's actually what the dream meant, but that's what I interpreted it to mean.
But was anybody willing to go along with you?
Not a soul. Not a soul. They listened to me and they humored me for a few minutes, and that was it. The rest of the story is that after I left, there was a period of 18 months where they had a new pastor, and you know, I'm not saying it was the pastor or anybody else, but everything kind of fell apart.
Hmm.
So everything that I helped build with the people that were there kind of crumbled, as if, you know, as if a fire came through and destroyed it.
Mm.
And then in the following 3 years after that, they had an interim pastor who came and put it all back together, and now it's stronger and better than it ever was.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I can connect it to the dream. But, you know, they always say hindsight is 20/20.
Right.
I can say, of course, that's what the dream
was
about. But, you know, who knows?
It's perfectly clear now.
Yeah. But that happens to me a lot, that I'll have the dream, I'll have no idea what it means, and I'll work on it a little bit and get a better understanding. And then I can look back and say, you know, a certain event will happen in my life, and I'll say, of course, that's what it was. But, you know, it's impossible to...
Well, you can't prove it.
Absolutely.
How do you prove it?
Not. And that's the tricky part.
You know, it's interesting, in the preface to your dissertation, to your work, you talked about some of your experience attending dream workshops, but having to do it sort of cloaked as continuing education. I'm curious, because it seems to me that in a faith community, if no place else, that dreams, being beyond the can of reason, being from a world that is not concrete, would seem to be more accepted. But that's not been your experience.
That has not been my experience at all. And
why do you what's going on there? What do you think?
I don't know. It's been very frustrating for me.
You had a little bit of an epiphany that did not come as the result of a dream. It came as the result of someone who happens to be a Unitarian Universalist minister whose lead you're following in embracing dreams. Would you tell me a little bit about discovering his work and what called out to you in that work?
Yeah, his name is Jeremy Taylor, and I came in contact with him first from a therapist that I was seeing while I was in Nebraska. And he was just starting to get into Jeremy's work and doing workshops on projective dream work. That's what Jeremy calls his projective dream work. And so I went to this first workshop, and I was so taken in by what was happening, I was sold right then and there. And then it turned out that I got in contact with somebody else who was in Colorado, who's definitely a disciple of Jeremy's. And so we started having some contact, and I started doing some dream work with her over the phone. I would send her one of my dreams, and she'd take a few days to look over it, and then we'd have a 90-minute session over the phone where she would help me, you know, decipher some of the things that were in the dream. And she facilitates workshops with Jeremy Taylor twice a year in Colorado. And while I was in western Nebraska, it was very close for me to go. So I went twice a year. I mean, I haven't been able to go so often since I've moved to Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. Is there, in that kind of work, is there a, trying to figure out what terminology to use, kind of a continuum where after you work with a therapist, an interpreter for a length of time, it becomes clear that you have a personal vocabulary in your dreams, that pulling something crazy out of the air, a golden retriever recurs in your dreams. Does that become part of a personal vocabulary?
I don't think so, because different symbols at different times mean different things.
Oh, sure.
And there's just not one set definition or meaning of anything. So it kind of depends on what's going on, what lessons am I looking for? What do I need to do to change my life? So, you know, one day maybe a golden retriever means, you know, unconditional love, or maybe mm-hmm. one day it means go get the newspaper, you know. So.
Is in your experience, and I know people tend to follow Freud or Jung, but not both, but is there kind of a collection of universal symbols that do seem to recur in a given culture, in a given type of society?
Yeah, if you sit in a group of people and ask, you know, about recurring dreams and find some commonalities, there's a lot about teeth falling out.
Mm-hmm. Meaning change in life?
Meaning change, transition, yeah, those kinds of things. Anxiety. I still have nightmares where I'm still wearing braces like I did when I was a kid.
Oh.
And my teeth would fall out with the braces on them.
That's horrifying.
Oh, it is horrifying. And, you know, always happy to wake up and feel my teeth are still there, minus the braces, which is a nice thing.
That's a good thing, too.
Yeah, it was a way good thing. I just had some conversations with some of my coworkers lately about recurring dreams about being back in high school, about it being the end of the semester and forgetting that I was even supposed to be in class or that there was a paper due and I didn't do it, or going to our lockers and we can't remember the combination and so we stress out about getting into our locker. So those are recurring theme dreams that seem pretty universal.
Where do you start when you're working with someone, with a client or a friend? Where do you start? Do you ask people to keep a journal, or what is helpful to people as they start trying to figure out what does this mean?
Yeah, the people that actually bring dreams to me in sessions tend to keep a journal. Specifically a dream journal instead of just a general journal where everything's mixed in, but to keep a dream journal separately so they can, you know, keep track of their dreams and then look back and see if there's recurring themes, if there's a red thread that ties them all together in some way.
Is there a movement to place what you're attempting to do, which is to not just interpret dreams, but to place them in a spiritual context? Is that, I know we talked a little bit earlier about even in the clergy, liturgical community, that's not that accepted, but is there a growing acceptance? Are you starting, you plural, starting to change minds out there?
I think so. It kind of depends on where you are. If you're living in Western Nebraska, not so much. You know, in Colorado, in the Denver community, Boulder, and those kinds of places, I mean, it's a big thing.
Hmm.
I think it's becoming more common here. I think it's still hard to find groups that work on dreams, but there are some out there someplace.
Mm-hmm.
When I was getting ready to write my thesis, I formed what I call the dream team.
Hmm.
It was seven women, pretty diverse group, and we came together for 7 weeks and worked on our dreams, and I used some of that material in my thesis.
Hmm.
And there was a, you know, pretty overwhelming consensus that we need to be doing more of these kinds of things. I've tried to do some workshops and dream groups, but haven't had a whole lot of success, and I'm not sure exactly what that is. Maybe because people aren't aware of it, or you know, it sounds a little bit out there or something, and they don't want to be part of it, or afraid, or just too busy. I don't know what the reason is, but it's been a hard sell.
But so worthy. How did you discover what some of your dreams of your childhood and youth were urging you to do relative to your mom, and then what happened as a result?
Well, I know you read some of that in the introduction to my thesis, but something else occurred just within the last few months that has absolutely changed my life and my direction in my work.
Really?
Yeah. I did get to go to one of the retreats last April in Colorado. I hadn't been for 3 years, so it was so awesome to go. And generally, there's so many people there that they have to put names in a hat and draw names randomly for those who want to share dreams.
Mm.
And in the 6 years or six retreats that I had been before, my name never got chosen. It was really frustrating. And finally, this year, I just thought, this is the time. It's time. There's been some issues going on for me, and I know this is the time.
Hmm.
And I just know if it's not now, it's going to be never. And my name was chosen, and I shared another one of my recurring childhood nightmares. And I had a choice of either sitting in a group, and we do what's called projective dream work. It's kind of like you sit in the group and people give their ideas about what the dream might mean if it were their dream.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, it's a great method. It works really well. My other choice was to do what they call dream theater or dream portrayal, where you have people who actually act out the dream.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so I chose to do it that way, and I chose to be the director of the dream since I didn't want to be in the dream, since I'd been in the dream so many times. And what came out of that, you know, without telling you the whole dream, because that would take an hour in itself, was a greater understanding of my relationship to my mom and her history as a Holocaust survivor.
Oh.
Yeah. And I knew bits and pieces of her story, but didn't know all of it. And the dream didn't tell me all of it, but the dream and what we discovered through the dream led me to finding a book on Amazon, the only book in the entire universe, about Hungarian Jewish women in an airplane factory in Germany, which I knew my mom was in an airplane factory in Germany during the war. And in that book was a list of 1,300 of the women prisoners. Mm. And would you believe I got the book and I found my mom in that book?
No.
It still gives me goosebumps. It's just so amazing. And I didn't know her last name because she had been married, and I know nothing of her first husband.
Hmm.
But I, you know, got her last name. I got, you know, the places that she was before this camp, and I learned that she was in Poland in the concentration camp that's shown in Schindler's List, where the Schindler Jews were.
Wow.
She was in that concentration camp. Then she was in Auschwitz. And then she was in Buchenwald, and then she was in this airplane factory. And I knew nothing of Poland and Buchenwald. I knew that she'd been in Auschwitz for a couple weeks, but nothing of those other places. I knew nothing of her experience. I know nothing of her family. All of this has been so mysterious to me. And now I've got this little piece, well, it's really, really a big piece of information.
And the dream led you there.
The dream led me to that. And then the dream led me to do more work about second-generation Holocaust survivors, which I've finally come to the conclusion that I'm a second-generation survivor, and I've never owned that, never even thought about it. And then through my reading and research on second-generation survivors, learning how, in a sense, we too are traumatized by the initial trauma. And so it occurred to me that, okay, I'm a second-generation trauma survivor. I've got a lot of the same kinds of trauma symptoms that my mother had, depression, anxiety, anger, sleeplessness, nightmares. Yeah, if you put her PTSD types of symptoms up and you put my next to them and then overlap them, they're about the same. But I never had a specific trauma of my own. So it's occurred to me that, you know what, I know I'm not the only person in the world that has this going on. And see, I never knew it. I never understood it. It's like, why do I fight with depression and anxiety? Where does that come from? And now I understand. But I know there's got to be a lot of people walking around with the same kinds of things going on, and they don't know why. And so for me, making all these discoveries was about identity and about healing and about compassion. And, you know, my mom's relationship and mine, we was so conflicted all of our lives. And now my compassion for her is huge because I understand where she came from and what was going on for her. That doesn't excuse some of the behaviors, but I can find that I can forgive her. And for me, that's a huge healing thing.
Sharon Gamble with Dr. Mary Froese. You can contact her directly at mfrohs@cts.edu. Again, mfrohs@cts.edu.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You need to take a break from shopping and wrapping.
Absolutely. What a fun idea.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I have some suggestions, and I'll bet you do too, on our calendar we call
What'll We Do? Well, it is the last weekend to see A Very Phoenix Xmas 5 re-gifted at the Phoenix Theater. So I think that's a great break from shopping to go check out A Very Funny Very Phoenix Xmas.
This Sunday afternoon at 4, you can hear Musical Musings. It's part of a series. And on this particular concert, you can hear Indie Youth Klez, which is a youth klezmer band, as well as a piano trio. It's at 4 o'clock on Sunday at Munger Hall at Meridian Music, 1725 Old Meridian Street, Carmel, Indiana.
Very good. Hey, for kids who are wondering, oh, what am I going to do over Christmas break? Well, you should get ready to take center stage at the Palladium. They are actually accepting online registrations now for what they're calling a day-long extravaganza to fill the concert hall with back-to-back musical performances, and it is open to all ages and skill levels. And if you go to their website at thecenterfortheperformingarts.org, there's complete information about how to submit an essay describing why you are ready to take the stage at the Palladium. And they're having auditions on December 28th and the 29th, and then it's going to be a whole lot of fun when it opens on the 22nd. But you need to get that in now if you want to perform on the Palladium stage.
Very cool. If you're more into looking at art than creating it, I recommend that you text your parents or your grandparents and tell them to take you to Jingle Rails, the Great Western
Adventure. Oh, it's such a
adventure.
Great show.
You've seen it, isn't it?
Loved
cool?
it. I loved your interview about it, too.
It's so fun. It's just everything in miniature and these not only great buildings, but national parks, and Old Faithful is there, all to scale, of course.
I love the way that Old Faithful erupts. And, some of the details, especially like on the Lacey Building, I just thought was amazing for downtown Indianapolis.
It's stunning craftsmanship, all out of natural materials, too. And where is that? Did I say the Idle Drug Museum?
At the Idle Drug.
If
you didn't, you should. It's really worth checking out. What a great train exhibit for the holidays. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you're trying to plan what you're doing for New Year's Eve, then Big Car down in Fountain Square is having the Big Car Bohemian New Year's Eve party. Oh, Sharon, you wanted to talk about that too, didn't you?
I was going to say about that too, but
it's
going to
be so much fun.
It is.
It's a bargain.
It's a bargain. It's $10 per person. Good beer and wine available for purchase. Snacks available. All ages show. All proceeds go to Big Car Programs for 2011.
There you go.
And it's casual.
And how fun is that? There's also lots of other great, New Year's Eve programs. I know, like at the Jazz Kitchen, at the Chatterbox.
Yes, so.
Always a lot of fun. And
and the Family New Year's Eve at the Indiana State Museum,
right.
where midnight arrives a little bit earlier for your small children.
That's right. Yeah. Very, very good.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. We still have some holiday things to do between now and then.
And if you haven't seen a Nutcracker yet, you have no excuse. Go out and see one tonight. There's 15 of them performing around town, I think. So
check out
the School of Ballet, the Ballet Conservatory. There's lots of Nutcrackers everywhere.
There you go. And we'll be back next week with a special holiday edition of our show. With no calendar, but that will return the week after. And it'll be called What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Well, we're going to do something a little bit different for the last segment of our show today.
Sharon Gamble, of course, is here, but also Matt Soucy is joining us. Hello,
whenever
Matt.
You say something different, I got to jump in.
And, we thought we'd just sort of give a sort of a review of our own impressions of the past year in the arts in Indianapolis and what's been going on, what we've liked, what we've noticed. Sharon, ladies first.
Oh, you're so nice. But I know that's not going to last long. Maddie's ready to jump
he
in
is
here.
So ready.
I can tell.
Fine, I'll take my coat off the puddle. That's all right.
Well, I just want to say the year for me started with a really unusual experience. It was the Hoosier Dylan concert at the Athenaeum. This is Matt, did you get to hear the Hoosier Dylan concert?
I got to hear, I didn't get to see it.
Okay, it was fantastic. It was a very affordably priced concert. All sorts of the best Central Indiana singer-songwriters and musicians covering their favorite Dylan songs. Hmm. Norbert Kropp, former Indiana Poet Laureate, doing both some existing poems and a new piece he'd written for this occasion. And oh my gosh, it was 3.5 hours long.
Oh, that's right. I remember hearing that.
It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. They just kept going and going and going and going, and it drew the cool cross section of people. So that was, I know we're not going chronologically, but I just remember that was kind of a way to start off the year with a bang musically.
Well, this year was actually, we talk about arts in the city. This was my busiest year as a director. I wound up directing 3 plays. And doing the theater camp.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I really had to pick and choose what I could go see. And if it was even better, if I could bring my smarter 2/3, that would be my wife and my daughter. And we got to experience something together, not once, but twice. And that was at Fringe, the Shadow Ape production of Not a Peep, which, let's put it this way, the youngest one demanded to see it a second time, and it was just as enjoyable the second time
That's
around.
That's a mark of success. And for people who didn't get to I would say hear it,
experience it.
Yeah.
Shadow Ape,
I think the first Shadow Ape show that I've missed. I was so disappointed.
This might be my favorite Shadow Ape
really?
Production. I mean, it was Jen Johansson, Constance Macy, Ben Tevye, directed by Rob Johansson, and it was, I think, everything that Shadow Ape loves to do in Indianapolis and beyond is to give us a visual audio feast, and it was just a lot
they
of fun.
Do
and
a great job with that.
Yeah, the little theater critic, had an absolute ball. And
how old is she now?
She's 9, and yeah, I know, and she'll be on the show soon, I'm sure. But yeah, sales of Peeps rose in the Soucy House because of that play.
Well, I was thinking back on I think the one event for me that really sort of made the year is also kind of early in the year. It was in February last year, or this year, I guess we're still in this year, 2010, when the Bill T. Jones Dance Company came to IU, and they did a piece down there called Fondly Do We Hope, Fervently Do We Pray, and it was a sort of a dance theater piece about Abraham Lincoln, and if you know the Bill T. Jones Dance Company, they're always very theatrically based type of dance work out of New York, and it was one that had been commissioned by the Lincoln Museum in Illinois, and it was only performed in a few other places around the country, and we were actually really, really lucky to have it here through Bloomington and IU. And it was just a great night, and I was really thrilled to see that piece. And it's been interesting because, if you know, sort of following the dance and theater world, Bill T. Jones just recently got a Medal of Honor from the president, which was very, very cool. And he also just basically sort of formed his company with a couple other dance companies in New York as a new dance performance theater company called New York Live Arts. It doesn't even have the word theater or dance in it. But it's going to be really interesting to see what they do over the coming years and what sort of pieces they create and tour with and so on. But so that was kind of my big one, even though it wasn't exactly, you know, local artists, but it was pretty exciting for a lot of people to see that, I thought.
Absolutely. You know, people who know me think of me as a classical music geek, which I am. I admit.
Yeah.
I admit. My picture's there in Wikipedia if you Google that. But two of the most fun events I went to this year were jazz-based, and one was last winter in the kind of a snowstorm that we've had here recently where it just snows and the snow is so thick you feel like you're in the middle of a snow globe. And I was at the Jazz Kitchen hearing the Icarus Ensemble, three-fifths of which, am I doing my fractions right here, performs in the ISO as their main gig. But they do a really cool mix covers of classic pieces and arrangements. And then the other one, Travis, you and I actually ran into each other at, was the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra.
Oh, when they were doing
of,
Miles Davis.
Yeah, Miles Davis, Birth of the Cool. And no pressure or anything, guys, but we still think you should cover Sketches of Spain, too, mm-hmm. when your embouchures have recovered.
Yeah, that was a great, great
night.
Oh, my
gosh.
That was a really cool.
That I would have kept that going for another 3 hours if I could have.
We had a big film opening this year.
We did. The Heartland Film Festival, the Truly Moving Pictures folk, they put their heart and their support behind the Rob Reiner film Flipped. And we got a big Hollywood movie premiere here in Indianapolis. And, mm-hmm. and I wasn't here to experience the buzz when... Eight Men Out and A League of Their Own, which each also had their film experiences here. But the fact is, this wasn't shot in Indiana at all. It was shot in Michigan. Thank you for the tax benefits. But Rob Reiner, the director, wanted to have the premiere here in Indianapolis because of Heartland, because of the Truly Moving Pictures. So, you know, it was fun to actually, you know, wear those shirts with buttons and the tie, the fabric that goes around the neck in the, you know, in late summer, early
you
fall.
You know what those are, right, Matt?
Lynn keeps them out for me. But to be able to do this, and the fact that it was on a Monday, and I always tell people, you know, going out and enjoying the arts on Sundays and Mondays, mm-hmm. it's okay. You can do it. It is out there. But yeah, it was a lot of fun seeing a very sweet film.
It's charming.
It is.
Utterly charming.
And hopefully more people will go see it when it comes out on DVD. I think
it is out on DVD.
See, mm-hmm. So get cracking, folks, because we saw the box office numbers.
And brief description of the film?
It's Rob Reiner said it was a companion piece to Stand By Me, and he's correct. And it's about the on-again, off-again love affair between a child and then a middle schooler, boy and girl. And you get to see crucial moments of their intertwining lives from both points of view. Strong, you know, the two kids were really good. Familiar faces like Anthony Edwards, Penelope Ann Miller, John mm-hmm. Mahoney, Aidan Quinn, Rebecca De Mornay, and just a nice piece. And I think far more enjoyable than The Bucket List, and that made a gajillion dollars for Warner Brothers. So, but yeah, it was cool to have the big movie experience here in Indy. And of course, there's several film festivals here in Indianapolis, from the IIFF to the, pardon me if I don't have it in the right order, the LGBT
mm-hmm.
Festival,
right,
and of course the B-Movie Festival in Franklin. So yeah, there's a lot of film action, and of course the IMA have their series indoors and out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about dance a minute ago.
Yeah.
Travis, you are my go-to guy for understanding ballet in Indianapolis right now. Who's who, what's what?
Yeah,
can you explain it to us?
And are they doing the Black Swan? Not that version, maybe.
That'd be really interesting to see. You know, I mean, and it's great that Black Swan's brought so much attention to ballet.
Yeah.
The things we are a great ballet city. We've seen a lot of great ballet companies here, a lot of great ballet performers. But you do kind of need like a cheat sheet to keep track of them. So briefly, right now, what we have, the Indianapolis City Ballet, which is the ballet that brings in some of the best dancers from all over the world, but none of them local, except for some work that David from Dance Kaleidoscope has done with them, but with choreography. But in terms of the dancers, they're the best dancers from the world, but they come here about once a year. Another great performance they did in August, and that was great. So that's the Indianapolis City Ballet. There's the Indianapolis School of Ballet, which is really focused on teaching kids, and they, of course, do a Nutcracker, and they're doing Coppelia again coming in this spring, and they have a great program of instruction, but also very high-quality performances. And now you've got a new one, which is the Indiana Ballet Conservatory. And that's a tricky one, too. And they have come out of sort of a couple different places, and they're sort of a combination of bringing in nationally recognized dancers as well as having locally recognized dancers performing, but also classes. So they're sort of a merge of a bunch of different things. And they're actually doing a Nutcracker this weekend as well, and bringing in one of the stars of the Boston Ballet. So those are sort of the three main players in ballet. Of course, there's always Dance Kaleidoscope, Gregory Hancock, Modus, lots of other great dance companies. But I wish these ballet companies, one of them would just not use Indiana in it. That's my wish for 2011.
Well, we've all been around long enough to remember Ballet International, mm-hmm. and its name change, but
And everybody, don't turn out like Natalie Portman does at the end of the film. Let's just leave it at that.
That's right.
Well, it is all about the turnout, actually.
Oh.
I'm going ballet
to,
joke there.
Yeah.
We'll go to the bar
to
later.
Plie yeah. into the next.
Nice.
I'm going to releve into the next. The next topic, which is, you know, some new venues have opened up recently.
Yeah.
We've got the White Rabbit Cabaret livening things
Very
up in
cool
Fountain
stuff.
Square. And one of my favorite venues is actually the result of a move, but I love Gallery 924,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, all of the Arts Council of Indianapolis's new space at, surprise, 924 North Pennsylvania Street. The building, which, if you've been around long enough, you might remember a club called Utopia or the Living
mm-hmm.
Room.
Living Room's still
living
there.
Living Room
but,
Lounge,
mm-hmm.
the south part of that mm-hmm. building. But my favorite show was the very first show at Gallery 924, in which all of the Arts Council staff members were invited to bring their own art that they
mm-hmm.
had purchased from local artists to populate the gallery. And it was just, it was so interesting and so revealing.
And they had stories with the art.
Stories with the art.
You know what, I'm glad you brought that up. That was one of my favorite shows the entire year as well.
It's just so personal and gives an example of how and why local art is accessible mm-hmm. to everybody.
And the thing is, there are so many great local galleries. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've got 924, the Lurie Gallery up in Carmel does have local artists. Of course, Chris West on Mass Avenue, Art Box, and then Harrison and Big Car. And there's so much great local art. You know, I was up in Michigan over the summer. I was talking to a gallery owner up there, and she said, well, I hear there aren't any galleries in Indianapolis. That's what a collector told
what?
Me. I'm like, no.
Oh,
there are
Lord.
Wonderful galleries.
There
and there's so many great local artists.
Close to 25
and,
around Mass
yeah.
Ave alone.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, there's definitely plenty
we need
of,
to toot our own
of local
better.
Art and visual art
Let's
out there.
Let's center this
yeah.
conversation.
That's right.
But I absolutely agree with you. I love the new 924 gallery.
Yeah.
Speaking of new locations, this year, Indy Jazz Fest, we think, has a new home. This was their third.
It's a big move for them.
Yes, their third location in 3 years. But it was at Opti Park by the Indianapolis Art Center in Broad Ripple. Still the three-headed monster, Al, Rob, and David,
mm-hmm.
who are still running it. Still a traditional jazz lineup. This year, Al Jarreau and Najee were headliners, as well as the Owl Studio All-Stars, which is always a lot of fun to see all those local ladies and gentlemen performing. And one of the things I still enjoy, that I think it's a smart move, are the individual shows throughout the week. And two of the best that I got to experience were the Preservation Hall Jazz Band at the
gosh.
Jazz Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a wonderful slice of New Orleans in Indianapolis. And then the Friday night concert at the Madam Walker Theater of Dee Dee Bridgewater, who just mm-hmm. got a Grammy nomination for her album of Billie Holiday tunes. And all the events, the individual events and the attendance this year was up considerably compared to last year's fest. And it was just a great, great day for music, a great week for music. And hopefully the Jazz Fest has found their place and more people will come out next year.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, another organization that I think has found its place is the Cabaret. They had some moves as well. You mentioned Jazz Fest had three locations in 3 years. Cabaret had three locations in like a month.
They
right.
win.
You know, but they settled down at the Columbia Club, Cabaret at the Columbia Club, and it's a beautiful space with a great piano, and they've been doing some really neat shows there. So, you know,
and
big shout out to Shannon Forsell for that.
And, you know, one of the coolest things about seeing a concert there, of course, depending on the time mm-hmm. of year you go, right here in the middle of winter, this won't be true, but if you go in spring or summer, you get to watch the sunset
mm-hmm.
Because the beautiful leaded glass windows are behind the performer, and it's just gorgeous, spectacular, elegant, elegant setting.
It is.
Well, you can see the sunset. You can see the sunset now. It's just it's at 3:30.
Yeah, you're just probably not at that performance.
And by the way, Tierney Sutton's going to be coming there in January. I think that's the 7th and 8th. So
cool.
that's a can't miss show.
Speaking of places to watch the sunset, I know we're all geeked about the Virginia Fairbanks Banks 100 Acres Art and Nature
yeah,
Park, which
huge.
Needs an acronym.
Not to be confused with the 100 Acre Wood. That's a different
no,
thing
right.
altogether.
Yeah, but that was probably one of the biggest art stories of the year.
Absolutely. And I know it's still settling in and stuff, but boy, I love the bones sculpture and the basketball.
I'm a big fan of the benches myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun to walk, you know, on a cool autumn afternoon or a warmer spring afternoon or just doing it in summer. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun to go outside and check out. You see, art is outside as well.
Yeah.
That's right. Art is all around us.
A lot of greats. I mean, I just thought it was a great year overall. I mean, so many cool things that were happening. A lot of stuff with Food for Thought and that theme with Spirit in Place and Humanities Council. And they were actually doing events really almost all year long related to food. And then everyone's been sort of getting ready for the Palladium, which
is going through
its tuning concerts
actually,
now.
That made it onto my list of one of my favorite events of this year, although it's really a precursor of things to come, is going to one tuning concert in particular, just because it's so cool to see the mechanics of how you tune. How do you tune a building? How do you make it right?
Yeah.
How do you make the sound balance right? And what are some of the tools you can use to change that balance?
Art of the Matter live from the Palladium?
Oh, we could. You never know. It just may happen.
That'll get it out of you.
Stranger things have happened. Hey, only if you're there.
Thank you.
Oh!
Matt, the Indiana Film Journalists
Association.
Yes. Which you're actually a part of?
The doughy white guys with glasses and Gina.
You guys... You guys ever get out in the sun? You guys just came out with a list. Is that right?
It's our second year.
You want to
wrap
up with that?
We had a very intense brunch at Mesh on Mass Ave and talked about the awards this year. And this year, and remember these. Well, thank you. And these.
That's a drum roll.
Yes, these award announcements are for entertainment purposes only.
Okay.
Don't try this
at home.
No.
All right.
Best Picture. We selected The Social Network, which is actually my top choice of best film of the year. James Franco for Best Actor for 127 Hours. Natalie Portman for Best Actress for The Black Swan. Okay. Christopher Nolan, Best Director for Inception. And, well, you can go check out the others online. And we have a Hoosier Award, which we give out every year. Some film link to the state of Indiana. Yeah. And it goes to writer-producer Andy Redwine, who gave us the film Paradise Recovered.
Yeah, she's very cool. Very interesting film, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you
Here on Art of the Matter.
That's right. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallarab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. It will be our special holiday music show.
We'll have lots of great holiday songs from local musicians featured on our show.
And some eggnog and cookies, too.
Of course, they'll be oral. So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.